supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dr. Dan Gottlieb. Some of you have experienced the sheer joy of watching a toddler go vertical.
Come to Dada. Come on. Be here. Yay! I think someone just learned how to walk.
And so begins the growing list of things our children can do. Walk, climb, read, draw. There are many childhood milestones to look forward to. Till our kids arrive at the teen years. Do I hear a gasp? But why? Is it that we're about to send young people into the adult world, but first they must undertake some of life's more complicated tasks, like driving, navigating peer pressure, managing money, exploring sexuality, and making choices on their own? Well, my guests today say yes, that does seem daunting, but it can be done in a way that fosters independence, creativity, and confidence in your mini grown-up. We're talking about guiding teens and letting go on today's show. I'm joined by Ken Ginsberg and Susan Fitzgerald, and you may know them from their recent book, Raising Responsible, Resilient, Self-Sufficient Teens in the 21st Century, Letting Go with Love and Confidence. Ken Ginsberg is a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He's an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. Welcome to Voices in the Family, Ken.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Susan Fitzgerald is an award-winning journalist who specializes in medical and children's health issues. She was a reporter and editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer for 25 years. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Jennifer. Great to be here.
Great to have you. Well, later in the program, we're going to touch base with Salome Thomas L. He's the principal at Edison Charter School in Wilmington, Delaware. He's a leader in educating America about the importance of living healthy inside and out. And of course, we're going to be taking your calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can tell us about guiding your teen toward independence. Has it been easy? Perhaps you're having a hard time loosening the apron strings, and we want to know at 1-888-477-9499. Ken, let's start with you. So adolescence is a lot about parents. You know, are they ready to loosen the reins? Are they ready to set an example or tackle a difficult subject? Parents wade through a lot of emotion related to letting go of their young adults, don't they?
Well, absolutely. Let's remember that having a child is like having your heart on the outside of your body. Okay? You are so masterfully in love with this child, and then you have to prepare them to fly from the nest. And when they're getting ready to fly from the nest, sometimes they're not so sweet. Not because they don't love us, but because of how intensely they do love us. And as a result, there are many emotions that begin to stir within us as we're getting ready to let our children go.
Absolutely. And I've read a lot about parents who are hyper-attentive to their child's experiences and problems, and they don't seem to give their teens time to hold the reins. Is this a case of over-parenting, and how does that affect young adults?
Well, young adults and adolescents, their job is to become independent. That is, they're biologically programmed to become independent. They have to figure out how to launch. That means that parents, we need parents. I'm the last person to say, parents, just get out of the way. We need parents, but we need parents to have a watchful eye to make sure that their kids are safe while they learn to navigate the world on their own. Essentially, parents are the loving safety net.
But if we're involved too much, I mean, it's a delicate balance, isn't it?
Kids have to learn to fall down so that they know what it feels like to lift themselves back up. It is a delicate balance. There is no one line that I can give you that says this is the balance to strike. That's the point of this book. The point of this book is to make parents look at each developmental task and say, how can I make my child succeed so that they will be able to stand on their own, but I make sure they do so safely?
Susan Fitzgerald, for the book Letting Go with Love and Confidence, you interviewed a lot of parents. You had some great stories to share with the world in the book. And could you hear a tightness in the throat when parents described how hard it can be to give their teens leeway to practice being responsible?
Absolutely. I interviewed parents from all different backgrounds for the book, and one of the common themes I heard was, even though parents of teens know their kids need to grow up, they need independence, they also have this conflicting view that it would be a whole lot easier to keep life exactly as it has been. So that conflict between your kids' needs and your kind of nostalgic feelings, we think is really important in this independence process. And we devoted the beginning of our book to helping parents, you know, sort of evaluate where they are in terms of being ready to let go.
And one of the themes that you mentioned is some parents told you they worry the future may not be that rosy for their teens. And did they say they tended to cling to their teens more so as a result of that?
That was a very common theme, the idea that my child's life may not be as bright as my own. I think that did feed into some parents' worry about, is their child doing enough to be prepared for the future? So perhaps that played into over-enrolling in extracurricular activities, taking, you know, more and more high-level courses in high school.
So really taking charge of their kids' lives to keep them so their options are even more open?
There was definitely a sense in the interview of this sense that if we plan everything now, it will assure a better outcome later on in terms of the academic success.
Ken, you encourage parents to understand how they parent, and you ask them to take time to notice what their teen is like. Then parents can start to understand when their young adult child is ready for certain benchmarks and experiences. You say age, the actual number of birthdays, is not an indicator of readiness.
Oh, absolutely not. We're looking at development in so many different ways. There's the age, which is, you know, tied to it, but it's about how you think. There's cognitive development. There's how you see the world, social development. There's so many different things. There's temperament. Every single kid is different. And if you say, my child is 14 and the child is 14 years old down the street does this, then you're really undermining your child's chance of success. That's why the whole beginning of the book is about making each kid, each parent, a child development expert, not on all children, but on their child, so that they understand their temperament, where they are physically, where they are emotionally, where they are spiritually and morally. When you put all that, as well as their temperament, then you begin to know how to guide your child.
Gosh, we signed up for a lot
when we had our
little ones. I want to reintroduce, this is Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. I'm having a conversation about guiding teens toward independence. My guests are Kenneth Ginsberg and Susan Fitzgerald, and they've written together about the subject. Ken's a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and Susan is an award-winning journalist who specializes in medical and children's health issues. Please give us a call. The lines are wide open. 1-888-477-9499. Join our conversation. Are you holding on? Are you letting go? Tell us your story. 1-888-477-9499. Ken Ginsberg, some parents obsess over whether their teens will make mistakes. And I'm sure that can delay this loosening of the apron strings because the parents want things to be just right. I assumed leeway to fail is valuable. And I mean, after all, we learn from our mistakes, don't we?
Right. So let me answer the question. Yes, they will make mistakes. And yes, that is good because that is how they learn to pick themselves up later in life. And if we protect our kids so much during childhood and adolescence that they don't learn how to pick themselves up, what are they going to do when they're 35 and we're not there picking them up? Sometimes you have to make big mistakes. And when they can be done under our watchful eye and we can guide them to repair those mistakes and recover from them, that's really effective parenting.
Right. And Susan, parents must tell you, this is really hard to do. Watch your kid take a risk, possibly fall.
It is a theme I heard over and over again as I interviewed parents. They said the stakes seem so high in the teenage years. It seems like, you know, little kids, little mistakes, big kids, big mistakes. And so how do you strike that balance between letting your kid make mistakes, learn from them, but also being concerned about safety and all the issues that are really essential to parenting? That's when coming to understand your child's temperament, what their experience is, what kind of experience they have, and whatever new challenge they're taking on, that can help parents find that middle ground.
Right. And in the title of the book, I'm reaching for the book right now, Raising Responsible, Resilient Teens. So let's talk about the two R's here. Ken, learning from our mistakes is a path toward resilience. It helps develop our resilience, right?
Absolutely. Resilience is about how to bounce back when life gets tough. And to know how to bounce back, by definition, you have to have fallen sometimes. You have to know what it feels like to not be where you want to be and to see what it took to get you to recover. That's what resilience is all about.
And then I want to tag on to that. So say we're not letting our kids make our mistakes. We're involved with every little thing that they do. And then we start to push a little bit too, because we might want a little bit more out of the kids. When parents are pushing kids to succeed, you say they can undermine long-term success. So give us a summary of what this is. It's an authentic success that you talk about.
Right. Well, let's understand what we're really doing when we're parenting. It's not about what our kid looks like when they're 18. It's about producing a human being who's going to be a successful 35-year-old, 50-year-old, be able to lead us into the future. What do you need? You need for a person to be generous and compassionate so that they can repair the world. You need them to be hardworking, to have tenacity, to have grit. You need them to have collaborative skills. You need them to be able to take constructive criticism. You need them to be creative. You need them to be innovative. You need them to be resilient. There's so many things you need. And when we push our kids too hard now, looking only at 18, saying, if you do not do this now, then you're not a success, kids freeze. The stress drives them towards perfectionism. In particular, perfectionism is the death of creativity and innovation. Because when you are so afraid of not being perfect as someone else has defined it, then you're going to become terrified of a B+. If you're terrified of a B+, you will never think outside the box. You will never come up with the creative ideas no one else has thought of. And perhaps more importantly, you begin to develop an imposter syndrome. You know that you're not as good as everyone demands you to be. And you are terrified of being discovered, which means that you will not be able to take constructive criticism. And it is constructive criticism that makes us grow throughout adulthood.
I think that's a wonderful idea. Now, this idea of authentic success is a variation of success. So we're not talking about getting the A on a test or being the pitcher that got the celebrated game ball and so forth. But authentic success is what you're talking about with knowing how to be resilient, being creative, and the emphasis is on effort.
Absolutely. One of the things we actually know from research that's most important to raise kids who are going to be authentically successful is to learn to praise and notice and demand effort rather than the results. When we praise people for putting in the effort and help them to understand that effort creates different results, you can work your hardest. It doesn't mean you're going to get all A's, but it's going to give you information about what you're great at, what you're not so good at, and what your contribution to the world is going to be. And we can all put in our greatest effort. We can't all perform at the highest level.
We're talking about teens and independence. We're going to get to the phones. This is Voices in the Family. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. I'm going to go to the phones, and we're going to hear from Fran. Fran, you're on Voices in the Family.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm really enjoying this conversation with your experts, who are clearly experts. I've raised two successful teenagers who are now in their 20s and partnered and doing well, and I'm also a teacher. So there's a couple of things that I'm noticing from the conversation that I just wanted to comment on. One is that this process of letting people grow up and move on begins long before the teenage years, And as a teacher, what I see are third grader parents who don't allow their kids to make any kinds of decisions. So if you've waited until the teenage years, it's getting kind of late in the game to let your kids learn how to be independent. So along those lines, a suggestion is when my kids got to be about 11, 12 years old, or the time when they're starting to perhaps get a little embarrassed about things that I'm doing, I instituted a phrase called rule change. And what rule change does is a neutral stance that tells me that I haven't got it right, and my kids get to make the choice. So I'm driving them to the movies. Obviously, they can't drive yet. I start to pull up to the front of the theater, and they say, rule change, Mom, not in the front. You're supposed to be over to the side. So I, as a parent, let to get them make the choice. There's less embarrassment. They're in charge of their lives, and it begins this process of taking over the things that they should be doing.
Fran, you're good, and I love hearing from an educator, so thank you for calling in, Fran. Ken, so she says start early. For God's sake, start early.
Yeah, so Fran, I wish you could see the smile on my face right now because I so agree with you. And in fact, you know, we've been using the word teenager here, but I'm so glad you pointed this out because actually, we think that the time you begin thinking about letting go is when your kid's about 8 or 9. We've actually oriented this book for the preteen, even the pre-adolescent, because it is all about having kids. Kids are the experts in their own lives. That's the fact. And even a 5-year-old is the expert in their own life. That doesn't mean we let them make all their decisions. We're always guiding them. We're always loving them. The reason you have to follow Fran's advice and you have to begin early is one of the things we're trying to avoid during the teen years, to quote Fran, when my kids began being embarrassed to be with me. We want to prevent rebellion. You see, honoring a kid.
Isn't that important, too? Because you started off the show saying the kids need to carve out their independence, and doesn't that get them on that road?
There's a healthy kind of rebellion, the kind that says, I'm going to fly from the nest and I think my wings are ready. That's healthy. But what I want is for families to be as together as they can be. You see, if a parent listens to our message and thinks that what we're saying is, let your kid go, let them be independent, then no one's going to let them go. We are talking about a kind of independence that fosters interdependence, healthy families that thrive and that work together. And one of the ways of keeping families healthy is to acknowledge what adolescence is. It's about growing independence. When we honor that, when kids know that we are behind you, we have your back, we love you so much, we want you to become independent, that will turn the rebellion down.
Oh, interesting. And the two of you, look at each other. I want you to sort of like go back and forth like a little tennis match here. I want some names of character traits that young people need to become well-rounded adults.
Well, we mentioned resilience. That's going to be my number one.
Tenacity,
a sense of humor, ability to even take yourself lightly.
I want them to be compassionate, to be generous, and to really want to repair our world. I want them to be idealistic and to know that we expect that.
That is beautiful. We'll end on that for our first segment of Voices in the Family. We're talking about leading teens toward independence and responsibility with pediatrician Kenneth Ginsberg and journalist Susan Fitzgerald. We have another guest, an educator, Salome Thomas L., waiting in the wings. We'll hear from him later in the show. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dr. Dan Gottlieb. This is Voices in the Family on WHYY-FM.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
On the next Fresh Air, singer-songwriter and pianist Regina Spektor. Her latest album debuted at number 3 on the Billboard chart. At the age of 9, she emigrated with her family from the Soviet Union to New York to escape anti-Semitism. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
back. This is Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. Letting go, creating a framework for teens to explore independence, is the topic of today's show. My guests are Kenneth Ginsberg and Susan Fitzgerald. They've written together about the subject. Their book is called Letting Go with Love and Confidence. There's a longer name as well, but you can see that all on our website at whyy.org. Ken is a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He's a professor of pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania School of Medicine. Susan is an award-winning journalist who specializes in medical and children's health issues. You may remember her byline from the Philadelphia Inquirer for over two decades. Give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Join our conversation. Are you holding on to your teen? Are you letting go with love? Tell us your story. Ken Ginsberg, some experts say the optimal parent is involved and responsive to their teens. We have high expectations, and yet autonomy of the teen is respected. What does it mean to have high expectations with respect to autonomy?
Well, autonomy is about being able to make your own decisions, and high expectations is that you're going to be able to make your own decisions and that you're going to be doing them wisely. But we as parents can't just assume that all the decisions are going to be wise. What we're going to do is we're going to give them good values, teach good character values. We're going to watch them to make sure that they're safe. And we are going to reward good behaviors. In other words, you get more privileges when you demonstrate responsibility. And that way it kind of just reinforces it for kids.
That makes sense. I want to ask Susan about the end of the summer freak out. I'm going through it as a parent right now. Here we are. The summer routine is giving way to the school bell. And as a parent yourself, you know how stressful it is for families to start shoveling more on their plates. Maybe this year Johnny learns to drive or finds himself in a late-night social scene or starts looking at colleges. Now, gin and tonics are usually helpful in my household, but what else are parents telling you that they do to handle that onslaught of everyday independence issues?
I think one of the points we make in our book is really trying to take a check of your own stress level, not just looking at where our kids have to be, what time is the carpool arranged, but how am I feeling about it? And, you know, without a doubt, if a parent is feeling totally stressed out about everywhere they had to take their kid, what they're doing, probably that's a signal right there that maybe something has to give. In terms of building independence, you know, around the age of 10, 11, 12, it's a great time, though, for your child to start really learning how to start arranging carpools, how to, you know, get ready, get the bag ready. That's all the kinds of skills that the previous caller talked about, laying in place, you know, getting your stuff ready before you go to bed. Going over who's picking you up after school.
Yeah, I think that's all great. And I find it's helpful. You know, there's already an email flurry going around among parents I know, and we get to chime in and talk to each other about, I guess a lot of our kids are going to middle school now, so they're changing buildings, and how are we all going to handle that? Well, it's really their world to navigate, but we're talking about it just so that we can have a sense of sanity as they go into those different changes.
Let me just add one thing, Jennifer. I do think, though, a strategy I used quite often as a parent was sometimes to remove myself from the frenzy. This time of year, parents can get really caught up in, well, what do you think about the teacher? Don't you think there's too much homework? You know, did you agree with who the coach put in? And sometimes we add to our children's sense of stress by our own reactions. We often do that. So sometimes just pulling back on the parent frenzy is a really good strategy.
I think that's a good idea, too. Well, speaking of the school bell and the start of the school season, I want to bring in a third guest. He is Salome Thomas L., also known as Principal L. He's the principal of Thomas Edison Charter School in Wilmington, Delaware, but I've heard him referred to as America's principal. He's a veteran teacher and administrator who champions young people in underserved communities. Principal L., welcome back to Voices in the Family.
Oh, it is awesome, awesome to be back. How are you? It's a wonderful show so far.
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm great. Now, we started this idea for the show, and I thought of you instantly. I just loved our conversation on past shows. I want to bring you in to the discussion briefly to take on this idea of teens exercising independence in communities where it's harder for parents to keep kids on track, maybe due to violence, drugs, crime. Now, you grew up in such a community. Are parents less likely to loosen those apron strings in face of that kind of distress?
Well, you know, it's sort of a dichotomy, because, and I just feel so humbled, you know, here with the other guests you have, because I'm just learning so much from listening to them. But it's almost as if you would think that when kids are growing up in areas that are unsafe, where there's violence and prostitution and drugs, that you would think that those kids would stay close or be held close to their parents. But unfortunately for many, they're not, because many times those parents are more likely to need to work more than one job. They're raising other children. They're trying to go, you know, attend school. And many times now today, they're raising children, other family members, children who aren't even in their family, and many of them are grandmothers who are trying to raise their extended family members. So it becomes very, very, very problematic for parents to keep their kids safe and try to take care of their families at the same time when they're living in high-poverty communities. But you do have parents who struggle financially but who still raise resilient children. You guys all know there's loads of research. Children who grow up in the homes where there's drug addiction or abuse, who do grow up to sort of live these lives that manifest themselves into ones where children become adults who are successful, who become servants, who are working in communities, and end up helping people who grew up in the same environment. And I was one of them. I grew up near Diamond Street Projects, right near Temple University, and was by the help of some teachers who supported me. Many of them were white and many African-American, mostly female, but who said to me, you know, kid, you can be me because I was once you. And they helped me get on the college support. My mom was a single mom, and now I've come back, and for 25 years I've tried to be half of what they were to me.
You're very fortunate. You're very fortunate. Now, you say young people draw strength from passionate leadership. So wherever they get that could be at school, could be through a mentor, a parent, at the church. What's an example of passionate leadership, and what does that passionate leadership do for the teens at your school?
Well, the issue for me with young people is that they oftentimes you will hear people say, you know, we have high expectations, we have high standards for young people. But the question for me is, what adults are there to help them meet those expectations? What adults are going to be there to be that confidant for that young person that they can trust, to help them build those self-efficacy skills? What adult is going to be there to say that teaching you to be resilient is not about teaching you to be successful, but teaching you how to respond when you are not? See, and that's leadership for young people, having the ability and the courage to say no to a young person. I'm a father of two girls, 8 and 11, and you ladies are high maintenance at any age.
Excuse me.
So I struggle as a parent, but I just know that discipline is a form of love. And our children have to know that when we set rules and we set expectations for them, that it's because we love them and we want them to be successful. I tell my students, I'm hard on you now because I want it to be easier on you later in life. And children in schools need the same type of adults, you know, in school that are raising good kids, you know, at home. Adults who care about them, who care enough not to give up, and who simply will continue to be there for those young people and believe in them until they begin to believe in themselves.
Well, I want to ask Ken Ginsberg, teens who have a repertoire of positive coping behaviors don't need to turn to self-destructive behaviors when something difficult comes their way? Is that the pattern?
Well, they're much less likely to. The idea is that almost everything that we fear in adolescence, whether you're talking about drugs or sex or cutting or gaming or running away, are human beings' way of feeling better when life is stressful or painful. And then what do we do as adults? Kids are surrounded by all these don'ts. Don't do this. It's bad for you. You shouldn't do that. It's terrible for you. What we really have to do is tell kids exactly what to do, because life is hard. life can be stressful, and I can't protect you from that, but I can give you a repertoire of skills and strategies so that when life gets hard, you will thrive and you will be able to contribute to the community instead of take away from it.
Okay. Principal L, in every community, I mean, really across the board, there's a category of parenting, I suppose, we can call uninvolved parents. That sounds so scary to me. Is there hope for kids to transition well into adulthood with uninvolved parents?
Yeah, there is hope. It's just when children are not receiving 100% support at home, then they need to receive 100% support in school and in the community. Of course, ideally, we would love for parents, all parents, to be involved. For some children, that can be toxic when their parents are heavily involved. So for some, it actually helps the child. But there's hope. There's great hope. And you know, Ken, you know, raised a great point. We have to be willing to be open with our own children and children that we work with in the community and through our profession, and be honest and admit that we've made mistakes in our life. Mistakes are the raw material to help us, you know, build that foundation for success. So we can't fear failure. We must own failure. We must learn from it and grow from it. And I think that that's those children who have parents who struggle at home, they find adults. If you look in families where there are two children or three children and one is successful and the others are not, that one child found an adult somewhere who was a great mentor, great role model, but who also was honest and transparent, all good skills, you know, of good leaders, but who also listen. Your guests today have talked quite often about how we must listen to children. We keep saying, don't do, and listen to what I say, and let's just listen and hear our children. I think we could avoid many of these major, major tragedies that we face in America if we just listen to our children more. And that's the key. So for children who have struggling families, struggling communities, they need adults who are going to be in those schools, be in those community centers, who are going to be in those offices where they're getting therapy and counseling, and have adults who say, I know you can be successful, and I will support you in being successful.
Well, there's that example of passionate leadership that we talked about in the beginning here. We're going to get to a break in just a second here. Principal L, I've got one last question for you. In the name of resilience, your program offers young people a chance to develop positive coping behaviors, and you do this a lot through chess, and we've talked about this on the show before. Tell us about your chess program and how that's helping kids develop positive coping behaviors.
Yeah, well, the chess masters say that chess exposes your character flaws, but what I've done is I've used chess to help students to realize and learn that they actually have character. You know, chess teaches you to critically think, to problem solve, and students can be very young and begin to learn chess. Chess is a game where you don't need a teacher. You can grab a book and teach yourself. But it's just a game where students can strategize and learn these problems, become a problem solver. And you can be very young and defeat someone very old like me and the rest of us here. So it's so encouraging for a young person. It is a way to teach children that smart is not something you are, it's something you can become. That's that growth mindset. And so my students in Philadelphia at Vaux Middle School were 8-time national chess champions. Kids at Vaux won 7 consecutive national titles, never done before in America by any school. And these are inner city students who will come from struggling communities, but who learn to become resilient. They found something that they could hold on to, and they could study, and they could become, you know, the best at. And that's the important thing for young people. They need meaningful participation, no matter where they are. They need to feel important. They need to feel that they matter. And as chess has given them an opportunity, Arnold Schwarzenegger has come to visit our young people and play chess. And of course, one of my young ladies defeated him as well. So chess is a great tool for girls to build that confidence early in life. So, you know, here in Wilmington, Delaware, Thomas Edison Charter School, this is our second year competing. Our students were runner-ups already for the national championship. It doesn't take long for what I say with my young people is you don't have to eat a whole pie to know it tastes good. And so this is a great thing, and it needs to be of one working on a letter to Obama because we need to be teaching chess in every elementary school in this nation.
I love it. Well, two things. I want to go to your school again. I want to be young again and go. And the other thing is I want to clone you. So maybe a third thing. I want to thank you for joining us briefly, Principal L, by phone today on Voices in the Family. Have a great school season.
All right. You too. Thank you and thank all of your guests. And have a great year, guys.
Yeah. Best of luck to you. Principal L, Principal of Thomas Edison Charter School in Wilmington, Delaware. His reputation for working in underserved communities is unmatched. We're up on a break here. More on our conversation about guiding teens toward independence with pediatrician Ken Ginsberg and journalist Susan Fitzgerald. After this break, I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb. This is Voices in the Family on WHYY-FM.
Devereaux supports WHYY, a national behavioral healthcare organization founded and headquartered in Philadelphia. Devereaux is celebrating its 100th anniversary of providing innovative care for individuals with behavioral challenges, mental health illness, and developmental disabilities. Founded in 1912 by Philadelphia schoolteacher Helena Devereaux, the organization was developed to provide help to children and adults with special needs. Find more information about Devereaux and its centennial anniversary at 610-542-3041 or online at devereaux.org.
In the collection of short stories, Gold Boy, Emerald Girl, Chinese-American writer Yi Yun Lee takes an unflinching look at how people cope with loneliness, regret, and divorce.
You know, one reason I write fiction is I'm curious about human beings, not about the surface.
We look at stories beneath the surface of China's rise to power. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
We're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, in for Dan Gottlieb.
In your face, losers! This helicopter is taking off!
No! Stop the hovering!
Okay. I love that episode of The Simpsons where Homer becomes a helicopter parent determined to micromanage Bart and Lisa. Had to get that in there. We're talking about cultivating independence in teenagers with Kenneth Ginsberg and Susan Fitzgerald. They've written together on the subject. Ken is a pediatrician who specializes in adolescent medicine, and Susan is a journalist who writes frequently on issues related to science and parenting. And we have a few lines open. We're going to get heavy on the phones in this segment of the show. You can call in still at 1-888-477-9499. During the break, Ken said, hey, let's get back to that idea of having a sinking feeling right before school. And you have some insight as to what that feeling is for parents as we get into the school year.
Well, first, I have experience. I woke up this morning blue. And I processed it for myself. And it is about the fact that I've had this amazing summer with my two almost 17-year-olds. I've just loved it. It's been about time. It's been opportunities for us to kind of reconnect, talk more, talk about all the things that I kind of want to talk about. And then school happens, and then it becomes about homework. And most of our conversations become about homework. Actually, hopefully they won't be. The point is that sinking feeling we don't need to have if we commit to the thing that is actually most valuable in maintaining our relationship, which is making sure that we have time to just listen to our kids, to just be with our kids, whether it's two designated dinners a week, whether it's an instant vacation where you go to a park, where you have 1 hour a week where you're not allowed to lecture, you're not allowed to teach, you're not allowed to interrogate, you just have to be. So the ending of the summer doesn't have to bring about this end of all of this great communication we've been having. We just have to kind of schedule it and plan for it. Mm-hmm. And we have to acknowledge that when we're with our kids, we can't only be focusing about what they're doing. We have to remember that our job is to figure out who they are.
I like that. Thank you. We can just end the show right now on that wonderful note. Susan, are parents doing that? Are they stepping back? Are they gracefully going through the transition into the school year and realizing, yes, I'm missing the intimacy with my child. I need to have moments like that during the school year.
I just thought of the word delight, because we all got a big smile on our face with that opening the opening scene you put out of a father watching the little kid learn to walk. And I think that's a word we forget as our kids get older. This idea that our kids are really delightful. They're really interesting, really fun. And what Ken just suggested is how to create those moments. Like, I'm a huge believer, save up your money, take your kid out to dinner once in a while, because you've got a captive audience sitting across the table from you. So just this taking delight, finding reasons your kid makes you smile, and often we just overlook that.
Well, I want to get to the phones, and we have Steve joining us on Voices in the Family. Hi, Steve.
Hi, hi. Hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Here's my question. I have a 16 and a half year old son who's really not begun showing any interest in dating, really at any level. My question is, you know, in context of helping them to be more independent, and where do I pull back? Should I begin to have conversations about this, you know, without being perceived as applying pressure? Or is this just something that I should let him get to in his own time and then, you know, participate as and when he'll let me?
Well, that's a great question from Steve, and I'm going to move that along to Ken.
Yeah, it's actually a really wonderful question. Because he hasn't shown exterior signs of dating, of wanting to date, that doesn't mean that he's not having sexual thoughts and feelings. I definitely don't think, frankly, that you should be pushing him in any way and say, I think it's time for you to begin dating. You're 16 years old. Shouldn't you be doing this? I think that that may really kind of reinforce any complex or insecure feelings he's having. On the other hand, you as a father are the only one who can really teach him about the most important aspects of sexuality, which are about respect and relationships and, you know, what is a healthy relationship is about. It's about mutual respect. It's about being with someone who, when you're with them, you are better than you are when you're alone. These are the kind of things that absolutely you can be talking about, and you can be modeling, and you can be noticing in the world. But what I wouldn't do is attach it to the stage, and aren't you ready for this? He'll be ready when he's ready.
Ken, I've heard you say it's important to have difficult conversations and discussions with teens that are planned and thoughtful. You say pieces can be put into place to increase the odds of a decent outcome for teens as they experience fresh circumstances. So there is that this planning process.
Absolutely, for everything. But for the really big conversations, like sexuality, we don't want to be planning time-wise for our kids. We want to be putting into place the knowledge and the character and their ability to discuss their thoughts and feelings with us.
Very good. Back to the phones we go. This is Voices in the Family, and Deb. Deb joins us on the program today. Hi, Deb.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that I was lucky to be a girl growing up in the Midwest in the 1950s who had a father who believed that girls were equal to boys. And he was an engineer, and I knew he knew about math, and I struggled with math. And every time I begged and pleaded and cried and acted out around homework, he would just say, "You're a smart girl. You can figure it out." And so to this day, you know, the day he dropped me off for college, I had never been away from home for more than a week. And he just took his cigar out of his mouth and said, "See you around, kid." And I got out on the sidewalk, and my knees started to buckle, and I thought, I can figure this out.
Did you?
And
did you figure it out?
I did. And so I was lucky to get that sort of that dual message. You can figure it out, and the reason you can figure it out is because you're smart.
I like that. Well, very nice. Thank you, Deb. Deb's dad trusted her. Right? How valuable is that?
Yeah, but listen to Deb's voice. It was more than trust, and it wasn't like he kicked her in the butt and said, "You're out of here." When you listen to her voice, you know that she got a lot of love from her dad, too.
Yeah.
Like, didn't you hear it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know? Now, one of the most basic bits of parenting advice that I've heard you lecture about and offer is, you've mentioned, take time to see your child and then love them unconditionally. Describe what that does.
Well, unconditional love means you love the kid you've got. You're not going anywhere. It's not about them being a bumper sticker for your car. It's not that they have to meet certain criteria for you to give the love. Unconditional love is what gives a human being the absolute security and safety that will allow them to take chances. And unconditional love ideally does come from a parent. But go back to what Principal L said. What he said is, when parents are available, that's fantastic. But unconditional love can also come from other people. It can come from aunts and uncles and coaches. It can come from teachers and doctors and nurses and counselors. Kids need to be believed in. Unconditional love is exactly what makes a human being know that they are respected and know that they matter.
That's very nice. Susan, I haven't forgotten you. Susan Fitzgerald, other parents certainly have a way of fueling our worst fears about raising our kids. And we tell each other some really great campfire-worthy horror stories. Parents also often gather and compare kids. So after the horror stories and the comparison banter, there's this tendency to then ambush our own teens. An example would be, I heard there were girls at that party the other day, and you said there weren't, and now you're in big trouble for not being honest. The ambush is a harsh reality. Some parents do it with grades, for instance. I mean, you've heard from parents who do this, and it's unsettling for everybody.
The grade thing is really a big way that I think as parents we're constantly ambushing our kids. And with these online grade reporting systems now, it's really easy to do that. We can be sitting at work, call up our kids' grades. And I know I did that at first when they first implemented those systems. One of the things we suggest is setting aside a time when your child knows you're going to look at their grades for that week. And then instead of having it be an ambush, have it be a conversation. And so we have some very good strategies around that. Getting to that comparison thing, again, I think this is where sometimes parents just removing themselves from the conversation really helps a lot. I have three young adult sons and was very surprised how often parents would ask rather nosy questions. How did your son do in the SAT? And I came up with, I rehearsed the line. The first one, when I was asked that question, how did your son do in the SAT? I would say, oh, he's in the zone. And I had absolutely no idea what that meant. But it kind of silenced them. And then the other question would be, well, where's your son applying for college? And again, I rehearsed the line. I said, the usual lineup, big school, small school. And again, silence. So part of it is, as a parent, you can work at avoiding some of that frenzy, because all you're going to do is bring it home. And
Yeah, I love it. Well, this is Voices in the Family. I'm Jennifer Lynn, and we're talking about guiding teens and letting go. My guests are Ken Ginsberg and Susan Fitzgerald. Let's get back to the phones on Voices in the Family. Regina joins our conversation. Hi, Regina.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm talking about a 15-year-old who's entering 10th grade, and this is the year they provide driver's education.
Dun, dun, dun,
and frankly,
dun.
I don't think she's ready for the class. But she wants to take it. She doesn't want to be different. She doesn't want me to ask that she delay it a year. And my thinking is she's just very ambivalent about growing up, about assuming responsibility and taking charge of her own life, except for wanting to drive.
Yeah, that's a
tough
one.
So that she wants to do, because she wants that piece of independence. But I'm trying to negotiate not making her feel different by delaying it a year. I don't think she's really mature enough.
Okay, Regina. I mean, I think what Regina's talking about is a metaphor for lots of other things, Ken. I mean, there are similar situations. You notice your child's not quite ready for something. Everybody else is doing it. Where does a parent start to address that and make their child feel comfortable and that eventually they will be ready and have that opportunity?
Right. So the issue is, for driving specifically, you're allowed to drive at 16. It's not that you have to drive when you're 16. In fact, there's been some great research that's come out in the last couple months that actually shows that fewer 16-year-olds are actually driving than used to. If you know your child, this is really about safety. If you know your child and you say, I do not believe my child would be safe driving, then absolutely, it doesn't matter what other kids are doing, and it doesn't matter that other kids are doing it at 15 or that it's 10th grade offered in your school. It's not right for your child. However, kids are uneven. Some kids are ready for one developmental task that's, you know, all the other kids their age are doing, and they're not ready for another. So take a look at your child and talk and listen and see why she says she's ready. It may be that she's not ready for other tasks in her life, but that she can make a really good case for you why she is ready to drive. And then you can use driving as an opportunity for her to demonstrate responsibility, to experience competence, and for her to feel really good about something. And that might affect other areas of her life. So I'm absolutely not making a decision for you. I'm saying, look at your child, have a really frank and open conversation with your child, and see if this might be a way that she really can demonstrate responsibility.
And maybe use the line, I remember someone saying, put the word yet. You are not ready to drive yet.
Yes.
Yet. It's going to come.
I have actually love the word yet, because it does get people to understand that it's going to come. And also, even when people are hopeless, you know, I work at the medical clinic at Covenant House, Pennsylvania, and all the time I meet people who are really demoralized and hopeless, and they tell me all the reasons why they can't accomplish something. And we end the sentence, I repeat what they say, and then I add the word yet. And sometimes their mouth just drops with the awareness that change can happen.
Yeah. And Ken, I'm giving you all of 20 seconds to help me with this one. You've been known to say that letting go and nurturing independence is an act of love. I love that quote. I mean, that's so yummy. Tell me a little bit more.
Absolutely. Our job is to have our kids be able to fly, to be able to navigate the world on their own. There is nothing that is more loving than to let your kid go. But when we let them go and we honor their independence in the process, they will come back for the kind of interdependence that we all want.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. We've been talking about letting go, guiding teens toward independence. I want to thank our guests, Ken Ginsberg, Susan Fitzgerald, and Salome Thomas-L. Thank you, Ken and Susan, so much for coming today.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Now, we'll be back on Monday, September 10th, with a show that focuses on our perceptions of individuals with intellectual disabilities. You can reach the Voices in the Family production team at voices@whyy.org. Download our shows at whyy.org/voices or on iTunes. Our engineer today has been Al Banks. Elizabeth Perez Luna is our executive producer of audio content. Emily Haas is our volunteer. Mike and Scott is our executive producer. Hey, let's take you out with some Bruce Springsteen. That seems fitting in light of his big concerts in Philadelphia this week. This song is called Growing Up. Filling in for Dan Gottlieb, I'm Jennifer Lynn. Enjoy your week.
And commanded the night brigade. I was open to pain and crossed by the rain. And I walked on a crooked crutch. Well, I strode all along.